What if your personal or business brand was so focused and so on target that it was easy for everyone in your organization to understand? What if you connected with your clients on an emotional level so deeply that they never forgot you? This is what the most successful brands in the world do. It's not about ad budgets. It's about developing a consistent brand, no matter the industry, location, or size of the company. Discover your brand and create an amazing, foolproof marketing strategy. This is the Brand Archetypes Podcast, hosted by Kevin Skerritt and Amy Zander, owners of BrandArchetypes.com. Join them on a journey to discover your most powerful, true brand.
Welcome back to the Brand Archetypes Podcast, everyone. This is Kevin Skerritt, and with me is Amy Zander, as usual. Hi, Amy. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing, Kevin?
Very good. So we've been kind of flip-flopping back and forth between different kind of flavors of podcasts. You know, we had the super fun one with Brand Fails. We had a couple serious ones. We've had interviews. Today, we're kind of going to be educational, and we're going to talk about brand architecture.
Architecture, it's a phrase, all right.
For architecture, this is not building buildings with brands. This is it's the structure of your brand. It's how do you piece together all the different parts? And when I'm talking about parts here, I'm talking about actual companies or products or services and how they all fit together. So it usually applies to medium and large companies and where they've built up, you know, more complex structure over time, either multiple products, multiple services, multiple divisions, sibling companies that are all working together. The more complex of a structure you have, the more difficult the branding process becomes, pretty obviously, right?
Yep.
So let's just take a simple example. Let's say two companies merge, or a company with one small product line expands out and adds a whole completely different product line. You know, what's the branding process? Do they stick with the big main parent brand, or do they try to brand individual products? So that's what we're talking about today. So let's get started. And if you will, Amy, why don't you start us out with the main, obvious component. The corporate brand.
Sure. So the corporate brand is obviously the main brand of a company, the overall arching message. And this is usually what the company uses as it starts and as it grows. It's kind of the first brand, if you will, that a company adopts. And it could eventually become what we call an umbrella brand, or a less used term could be a family brand. For example, like Nike has lots of sub-brands and products underneath it, like shoes and clothing and different things like that. So hence the term umbrella, overarching.
Right.
So, the main takeaway for there is like often the corporate brand is like the one that you start off with, and sometimes that can change or grow. And one example of this could be a real estate company where the overall arching real estate company has their main brand, but then each individual real estate agent wants to adopt their own brand to stand out from the other agents in that company and then all the other agents in their region. So they have their own kind of personal brand that they work with. So that would be one small example of how you could have a corporate brand and then a brand underneath it.
Yeah, and you threw out the term personal brand, and we're going to save that till the very, very end.
It's just a teaser.
That's a teaser. That's right. Okay. So we've got the corporate brand. And another kind of component of this brand architecture process is another kind of obvious one. We refer to it as an endorsed brand. So what it basically is the parent company, their name is used as a way of endorsing one of its products. So if I say Polo, you say
Marco. No. Ralph Lauren.
Or Marco. Right. That was way funnier. So I appreciate that. So Ralph Lauren is the correct answer. And so Ralph Lauren, as the parent company, is endorsing the product of Polo. So it's usually a very specifically and cited endorsements. It's actually said, you know, Polo by Ralph Lauren. It actually adds value to the sub-brand, and that's an important part of it. You can't just throw this out there and assume that it's going to add value. You know, an obvious one I think we've mentioned once, maybe twice in past podcasts is the relationship between the Clorox company, the Clorox bleach company, and Hidden Valley Ranch dressing. That Clorox is the parent company, but pretty obviously they do not set up an endorsed brand structure, architecture.
Right.
Because Clorox would not add value to the Hidden Valley Ranch.
No, brand. We don't want to think we're, you know, putting bleach on our salad.
That's right. That's not necessarily right. A good thing.
Right. And it's interesting because when you say endorse like that or endorsement, most people's minds go to like using a famous person or a sports mm-hmm. legend or something like that to endorse a brand. It can go that way. You know, it can go that way too, but, or they'll have like, if they'll, you know, lots of famous people seem to be coming out with like vodka brands or some people have like a perfume or whatever. And they'll say, you know, I know I can't think of one off the top of my head right now. Cause I'm of course when I need to, but,
no coffee.
Right. Yeah. But then the other thing is that if a company uses a famous person to endorse them and then that famous person messes up, that's always a big risk, right? But
like Tiger Woods.
Right, But you're talking – but we're talking about something slightly different where you have a parent brand and then you're promoting a product or service under that parent brand.
Right, and we're going to get to it here in just a second, but instead of an endorser – that you're referring to, the correct term is ambassador. So there are ambassador brands and brand ambassadors, and we're going to get to that in just a little bit. So, yeah, the endorsed brand is basically you're using one brand to support and lift up the other brand.
Right. So, so this brings us to talking about an individual product or service brand. So an individual product is how the consumer knows them. So example will be like Tide or Downy, and they're not usually represented with the parent company Procter & Gamble. So
it's not an endorsed brand. It just sits on its own.
Right. Curiously, Procter & Gamble used to be a completely invisible parent company for over like 150 years. Over the past 7 or 8 years, however, they have become much more visible with corporate initiatives, sponsorships, and publicly displaying products with PG as part of their identity. So
it's interesting to watch how big companies like this shift around. And, you know, I wasn't aware that it was 150 years old. That's a long, long standing brand. And then just to come out of the blue in the last seven or eight years, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about that ambassador brand idea. So when you hear the phrase, and this is directly from Wikipedia, if you want to even go that far to look up terms and see what their definition is, an ambassador brand, according to them, is the best way to explain this. The opinions about the brand are just as important as opinions about the product. So in the mind of the consumer, you're trying to tap into their brains to get them to buy, right? And what you'll discover is that there are some brands where how people feel about the company is more important than the actual product. You know, an example that they give is Colgate toothpaste. Like in India, the Indian consumer's opinion of the Colgate company is actually more important than their opinion about the toothpaste product itself. Now, you know, let's say it again. This is different than a brand ambassador. An ambassador brand is what we're talking about, is different than a brand ambassador, which is another way of describing that celebrity person you were talking about. It's a person who's hired by that brand to represent them publicly. And just like you said, Amy,
that can go south in a hurry. I don't know. It just seems like athletes and politicians and celebrities, they just get themselves in more trouble than the average person does.
Right. You got to vet them and vet them heavily, kind of like, you know, vetting a presidential candidate.
That's right. So interesting. A great example of someone picking a brand ambassador because they got into trouble was a commercial that came out about, I don't know, about 3 years, 4 years ago. Charlie Sheen was having all kinds of problems, and he was actually put under, I believe he was put under house arrest.
Sounds about right.
It's not, I mean, if I'm wrong there, and I could be wrong, let me just say that, I could be wrong. If I'm wrong, it was something like that. But the Fiat company said, hey, we can use that. And the commercial showed Charlie Sheen driving around, whipping around, driving his Fiat through his mansion, up and down stairs and through the foyers.
Excellent.
So, yeah, let's take that bad boy image that he was just going way overboard on, and the Fiat used it to their benefit. So brand ambassadors can go in different directions, but boy, you got to be careful.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay.
So the next one is piggyback brands. So that's where one brand rides the momentum created by another brand. It doesn't necessarily add value on its own. So again, we're going to use the example of like Colgate toothbrushes ride the momentum of the sibling toothpaste brand. Makes sense. Pretty straightforward.
Right? Yeah. So the toothbrushes, you know, I don't know if I've ever seen a Colgate toothbrush commercial.
Right.
You just that's where you buy it because it's sit right next to the it's in the same aisle at the grocery store, right?
Right, makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. A parent-child brand is another kind of distinction in the world of brand architecture, and it's pretty obvious. And I think I like using this term more than the terms we were talking about earlier, like the corporate brand or the endorsed brand. When you use the phrase parent or child in reference to a brand architecture, it's pretty obvious what's going on. The parent brand is the corporate brand, and the child brand is the product or the brand that's underneath it, right?
Right.
It's the same relationship as that corporate umbrella thing. You know, like I said, I think it's a little bit more intuitive, and I think the next one you're going to bring up is very similar.
Right. So yeah, the sibling brands. So I like this family analogy much better. It's easier to understand. So they have, it's similar to the parent and child, the sibling brand, but it's a more intuitive descriptor. So sibling brands are equal products and service brands that fall under a single corporate brand. So you could again say that, you know, the toothbrush and the toothpaste are sibling brands under Colgate.
Right.
Yeah.
Or if like, you know, let's go back to our Procter & Gamble example. If you Google the phrase list of Procter & Gamble products, I think you'll be pretty shocked at how many brands you recognized that are owned by Procter & Gamble. I mean, it is literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of products that you recognize every single day. And, you know, everybody has heard of Procter & Gamble, and everybody knows they're a big company and they're a big conglomerate and all that. But I think most people are usually shocked when they see the depth of that list.
Right.
So, yeah, when you talk about all of those brands, they're all siblings underneath the Procter & Gamble umbrella.
Right. Right.
And another way of talking about that corporate or umbrella is a house of brands. Just like Procter & Gamble, it's a house of brands. They just put everything under the same roof, inside the same house. And you know, it's used whenever there are lots of brands to, you know, consolidate and keep organized. And by having a house of brands, you are not distinctly and specifically creating relationships. They are all still standalone. They all still have their same management. They can be completely different archetypes and different emotional connections, but you're putting them under the same house, right?
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So then we have the brands that are called lifestyle brands. And not surprisingly, these are brands that consumers are drawn to because they fit into somebody's psyche or their lifestyle or a certain image that they're trying to make. So mm-hmm. You have a good example of this, Kevin.
Yeah. I had never heard of it before doing research into this, but I was looking at examples of lifestyle brands, I saw one called Perverse Sunglasses, and I'd never heard of them before. And apparently, probably I haven't heard of them before because I'm not a millennial. And apparently that the whole millennial generation, you know, hanging out with their friends, going to the beach, upping their style game, that their way of life, they're drawn to these sunglasses. You know, now let's compare that to, you know, Ray-Bans, which is probably more my generation, and we're going to get to those in just a second. But, you know, I think your point, Amy, is that these lifestyle brands that we find, the approach that they're taking is, I want to have, the consumer's mind says, I want to have that product because it fits with who I am, not because I have a specific need for, you know, what the product or the service does. It's right. Not about the product. It's about me.
Right. And what that product represents. Right.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So aspirational brands, which is kind of an extension of a lifestyle brand, is if you have a product that for any reason, it's usually cost, but if for any reason it's a little bit out of reach of the average consumer, that there's a much smaller segment of the population that actually seeks this product out, but other people want it, then it becomes aspirational. You know, for example, Ray-Ban sunglasses. You know, it's not many people who are going to be willing to drop $150 or $200, $250 on a pair of sunglasses.
Yeah, right? Especially for something that you're just going to lose 3 weeks later after you buy it, like right. I do.
Yeah, well, for me, it's a directly proportional, or it's inversely proportional to cost. So right. If I have a $3 pair of gas station sunglasses, I'm keeping those suckers forever.
Right, but, exactly. You know,
I may not get the Ray-Bans out of the store. I mean, I'm going to lose right. them on the way to the front door.
I know.
It's going to yeah. be terrible. So, yeah.
Air Jordans. Air Jordans are another good example.
Yeah. Those. Super expensive shoes. And boy, my nephew... He's becoming, I think he's actually got some, what's her name? A Filipina dictator's wife, Imelda Marcos. She was like years ago, this is decades ago, actually. She was just a nut when it came to buying shoes. She had thousands.
Yeah.
And thousands
she had closets of built for her shoes. Yeah.
That's right. Right. So that's how my nephew is with his athletic shoes and, yeah. you know,
Well, and like
$200 shoes.
Yeah, one of the brands that comes to my mind when I think of these aspirational brands in the respect of like just, you know, slightly out of reach of the average person or maybe a lot out of reach would be like Rolex watches, right? Because and then they're also that whole lifestyle brand too, because a Rolex watch mm-hmm. represents, you know, success and affluency and whatever kind of thing like that. And we talked about that in our ruler archetype podcast, because sometimes those aspirational sort of brands could do well with the ruler, because it's like, hey, you're either with us or you're not. You've got this or you don't, kind of thing. Not always, but that's one archetype that can fit well with that.
Our point here is that when you are growing, especially when you're growing, there is the possibility, a strong possibility, that you're going to need to at least consider the changing of your structure. And they are not usually dramatic overnight changes. These are usually small shifts that, you know, then you very specifically decide to branch out. Well, as soon as you make a branch, you have to consider these things, and most people don't. They're not even aware that it's a process. So things to consider... would be, well, how about your basic business strategy? You know, how much brand equity have you developed? How long have you been in the market? You know, what are your near-term, mid-term, and long-term considerations for your business? You know, so your core business strategy impacts how you make decisions about your brand architecture. Your competition, you know, what are they doing really well, or what are they doing poorly, and how does that influence you? What kind of market trends are there? You know, is the market changing? Is it expanding? Is it consolidating? Is it shifting? Target audience is another thing to consider. You know, if for those lifestyle and aspirational brands we were talking about, if your audience is changing, then you need to consider that. You know, we, like, you know, for example, you know, we're living in a healthier culture than we were 30 years ago. You know, dramatically, people are smoking less and eating healthier. And I just read a blog post about the decline in the purchasing of beef, that fewer and fewer people are eating the mass quantities of beef like they were half a generation ago.
Where's the beef?
Yeah, you have to understand how your audience is changing. Right,
right.
Some other not as important ideas, but still important, growth opportunities. You know, where is your future growth and success? Is it with this product or that product? Will it be with this approach or that approach, right? You know, an example, you know, we were talking about tobacco and healthiness. The Altria Group is the largest, I do believe they are still the largest company, maybe not the largest company in the world. They're up in the top 10. Enormous, huge company, and yet most people have never even heard of them. But as soon as you say Philip Morris Tobacco, that, oh, that's those people, right?
Right.
Well, they're making big shifts in the world of CBD oils and the cannabis industry.
Hmm.
And away from tobacco. And it's kind of a, you know, if you think about that, that's kind of a natural fit for them. But those moves, those shifts are being driven by the change in our culture away from tobacco. And, you know, obviously we're in a space now, I think there's 30 states, 20 states that have, where are we now on the whole cannabis thing?
I don't know. I'm not sure exactly what the percentage is, but it seems
it's,
like
it doesn't. That's not just not a handful anymore.
Right.
It's,
you know, right.
Yeah. And, you know, I think last thing I would throw in would be where are you getting your money? What's your source of revenue and your sources of profits? What products are working really well? You know, which ones have high margins, which ones have growth opportunities, and which ones don't? You know, where's the future of your profit? And that may cause you to rethink how your brand architecture is kind of configured, right?
Absolutely. And it's really exciting to think about your brand architecture, because that means your company is growing and expanding and you're adding more products or services or more market awareness or things like that. So even though some of the things we talked about seem a little bit more complicated or a little bit more advanced than just, you know, picking your archetype, it still is, it's an exciting place to be in your business, because, like, you know, like I just said, it just means that you're growing. And you've got you've got more things to consider, so that's exciting.
Right. So, I said earlier that we were going to come back to the concept of personal brand. So, Amy, why don't you tell us a little bit about personal branding?
No, I'm not going to tell you, Kevin, about personal branding.
Oh,
no,
why?
No,
I want you to tell me everything there is to know.
No, I think we should save it for its own episode, because it's a really important topic, and a lot of people out there are, you know.
Yeah, okay.
And it's one of those things that it's sometimes it's hard to separate your personal brand from your business brand. So I think it should
and
be a topic.
It's so huge. It is so huge.
Yeah.
Well, okay, let's, for people who are listening to us right now who were unaware of the whole branding industry, if you're not an agency owner, you're a company owner, and you're drawn to us by this new, interesting...
What is this crazy brand archetype thing?
That's right. Okay, so you're obviously not a brand strategy industry professional, so you may not even be aware that there is an entire industry offshoot. It's not even an offshoot. It is its own industry, personal branding. There are personal branding consultants all over the place. Years and years ago, back in the early 2000s, I was doing a lot of work with career professionals, so like recruiters and HR people and resume writers and career coaches. And that sliver, the career coaches, a lot of them recognized the power of this idea, and they branched off, and they, instead of becoming career coaches, they became personal branding coaches. And as I was watching this shift, it was also at the same time that I was discovering and diving into the world of corporate branding. And so I thought it was a very interesting offshoot. And it was actually a time where I was considering actually doing that, you know, becoming a personal brand coach.
Oh, were you going to then like develop your own clothing line and perfume line. And
no,
that
that's
kind of
not
thing.
What a Pristol brand is.
I know. I mean, again, this is going to be its whole other episode, but how you dress and talk and all that does have to do with your personal brand.
Absolutely. And your corporate brand.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure.
And, you know, how your employees dress. Is,
right.
Yeah, that's right.
We'll talk about that too. Yeah. So
lots of stuff, lots of new terms and new ideas. And the point of all of this is take a look at our show notes if you want to have a refresher on all the different terms. But the point is as you grow, these are things that you're going to need to consider.
Right. And we would love to talk to somebody. If you're listening to this and you'd like to reach out to us, we'd love to talk to you if you have a corporate brand and then you're thinking about or just have or want to enhance a like a sibling brand or child brand or something like that, where you want it to be a different brand archetype or a different brand than your corporate brand because you want to emphasize this particular product or an endorsement or something like that. One of these concepts that we talked about in this podcast, we would love to talk to you about that and brainstorm and troubleshoot some ideas because, you know,
sure.
Kevin and I geek out on that stuff. So Give us a call. Contact us. You can find our contact information on our website, brandarchetypes.com. Follow us on all the, you know, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, LinkedIn, all that good stuff. And as always, we have our word banks and our free questionnaire. If you're wondering what brand archetype you are, you can take our questionnaire on our website and start there and try to start to think about what archetype you are. And also next up, our next episode is going to be your brand in the world of COVID-19. So, yeah, just
that's gonna be doozy.
Yeah, so well, some things, you know, companies are doing well, and what your company could be doing or not, you know, things like that, just some ideas. And it's not just about COVID-19, but it's also just about any big shift that happens in the marketplace and how your company can adapt to it. So, we've got
surely.
Good ideas
for you. Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to that. In our notes, I think it would be interesting to do a tally of the companies that are not succeeding right now. You know, I just heard Lord & Taylor filed for bankruptcy. I mean, that's a, you know, 100-year-old brand. That's huge.
Right.
That's the number. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting discussion next week. And there we have it.
All right.
I will talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Kevin. Bye,
Kevin. Great. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Brand Archetypes Podcast. Are you ready to discover your company's archetype? Check out brandarchetypes.com, where you can download the book, find out about archetype-specific strategies, connect with us on social media, and sign up for our newsletter.